Welcome to Sassy. I'm Annie Murlowski, and I'm your host. Each week, we share the inspiring stories of female leaders throughout the tech industry. Thanks for joining us as we dive into the inspiring stories of career growth and development from women who are leading technology as we know it. Thank you so much for joining us today on Sassy. I am so excited to have Tanisha Griggs with us. Tanisha and I had the pleasure of working together, and now she is the CEO and founder of 37X. Thank you so much for joining us, Tanisha.
Thanks for having me, Anne. This is quite the privilege to be here and see you thrive with your new podcast here.
Well, thank you. Thank you. Well, I'd love to learn a little bit more about your role now and kind of what are the experiences that shaped you to bring you to founding 37X and why you've chosen to start out as an agency?
Oh, my goodness. Such a fitting question, because as you already teed it up, you and I were peers when we were working together at Terminus. And so I can say this with a lot of peace and contentment now in terms of what led me to creating 37X. Well, as you know, I was laid off last year in May. And so as a part of that RIF, there was kind of a transformation that happened. And with, you know, so many rifts happening within the economy right now, within tech, across all industries, it was a touchy topic for a while. And it's not necessarily easy to, you know, process when it happens to you. But I do believe that for me, it's just part of my faith that there's a higher power, is the universe aligning to lead us where we need to go. And so it was still a very positive, you know, experience for me being laid off, because Terminus, as you know, became my first client and supported my business. So that's why for me, it's just like full circle and still very much so to me, just divine that this happened this way.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's a great way to kind of, you know, take a situation that can be really tricky and make it into, you know, a new adventure. And I'm so excited for you and seeing what you've done with the business since you've launched it. And you shared you just hit a milestone for the company.
I did. My baby's 6 months old. And so that was pretty exciting. You know, as you embark on a new journey, it's scary. Like, it's so much uncertainty. And so for me, it's been a lot of, you know, lessons I've been learning as I go. I always say, like, you know, sometimes we take that leap of faith. Sometimes we're pushed off the cliff, but we kind of learn to fly in the sky. And I've been learning to fly as I go and really learning things that have really propelled me forward. You know, I've had key learnings that I'm like, already, nah, don't do that again. But just continue to iterate and improve, you know, it is really my focus here.
Awesome. Well, tell me a little bit about how, as someone who has worked on the company side in a software space, what you learned from that and how you've taken that into what you're doing now.
Yeah, I've learned in terms of creating like your own company per se. So I've been executive sponsored to companies as small as SMBs, all the way up into Fortune 500s with enterprises. And like every brand I work with as a marketer, like they will, you know, the number one goal is what? Revenue. Everybody wants to make money. But it's like the how. And so for me, my company's name is actually 37X Digital Marketing Agency. And everyone always asks, like, where'd the 37 come from? And if you've read the book Atomic Habits by James Clear, he talks about the incremental progress from just focus on getting 1% better every day. And there's a formula that if you get 1% better every day, you'll be 37 times better by the end of the year. And so that's really what's so deeply ingrained in terms of my learnings is like, how do I, one, do that for myself and my business and not try to boil the ocean and do everything in one day, but work on those small incremental steps to progress forward. That's something that I just try to stay anchored on as it relates to my business and as I'm, you know, advising other businesses as well.
Awesome. Well, when you were growing up, was this something that you wanted to do as a child? Did you want to own your own business?
Girl, no. So I think about that, I have like five different answers. I was that kid that was just scatterbrained. Like, I wanted to do everything. So like, as my son, like I asked my son, like, what does he want to be when he grow up? And he says, I want to be a bus driver. I want to be an NBA player and an engineer. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is my child. This is what, like, how I used to answer my questions. My first, I think, role that I wanted was to be a forensic scientist. Like, I wanted to go investigate crime scenes. Why? I don't know. I'm just inquisitive. Until, sorry, this is a little bit morbid, but I went and went, we had like some field trip to view an autopsy and I passed out, like literally. And so I was like, okay, maybe forensic science is not for me. But I've wanted to be everything from a songwriter to a veterinarian. At one point, you know, I thought that I wanted to actually be an advertising executive and doing creative brand strategy. And I was like, okay, this is actually something really feasible. And I leaned in there. So I did actually have an early experience of like having an interest in advertising. And yeah, it's just been all over the place. I'm still figuring that out, but I'm as clear as I've ever been now.
Do you think there are any elements of, like, think back to like the forensic science part of that passion that you do today? Like, I can make some connections that, like, maybe doing some analysis after something's already happened, that you do that in every day.
I do. I love that question because I do believe that there are elements of everything I've ever wanted to be in my career now. And so like with the forensic science, it's like, how do you go and investigate like how something happened? And I look at just, you know, within my role today, I'm always problem solving. I'm always investigating your prior data to see like how, you know, your marketing campaigns performed over time so that, you know, I can improve on that going forward. As a songwriter, you know, that's about creativity, and I'm copywriting sometimes. I'm writing ad copy and messaging that's going to resonate and get to that heart message of people. So there are a lot of elements. Oh, with a veterinarian, I work with my dog every day. Like, that's my coworker. So I feel like there are like parallels in everything I've ever wanted to be in my role now.
That's awesome. That's totally true. And that I think that that creative mindset and the ability to do the analysis, like all that merges together in what you have to do now to run a team and connect with your clients. And it makes total sense to me.
Can I ask this? Because I feel like your listeners are going to want to know. I don't know if you've answered this before. What did you want to be when you were growing up?
You know, it's actually kind of funny. My first job that I wanted to be was a plumber. And I thought it was really fun because they had all their tools. And that we, you know, that was like the only repair person I remember seeing as a kid, which I don't know why. And that was what I thought I wanted to be. And at one time my mom actually made me sit and watch while they changed out a toilet. And I was like, I don't want to do that. But okay. I think it was like that toolkit, which I try to apply that in everything I do now, is that they had a really amazing toolkit full of all the different things that they could do different things in specific jobs with. And so that's kind of how I've built my career, is I want to pick up different tools that I can take with me into my next role.
You're a marketing plumber.
Got to find those clogs.
Exactly. And like at some point, you're probably going to start your own thing someday and do amazing. And I really hope to see some type of plumbing branding or something into like your brand. It has to be. It will only be fitting.
No clogs in your funnel.
Exactly. That part. Unclog it. Who wouldn't want to unclog their funnel? Come on. Like, this is groundbreaking.
I love this. This is, now we've got a brainstorm session for you know, my future. Exactly. Well, you talked a little bit about the challenges that you had last year, but I'm kind of curious if we could step a little further back. Like, what are some other challenges you faced in your career and how have you overcome them?
Oh my goodness. Great question. So I just made a post about this on LinkedIn. As I hit my 6-month milestone, I talked about basically it's kind of imposter syndrome. It's elements of imposter syndrome. But I read a meme and it said 99% of our problems are actually in our head. Only 1% is what happens in reality. And so when we talk about challenges, I'm in no way am I trying to undermine like systemic and obvious challenges in the workplace. but there are some that have been avoidable and they were in my head. And so I think a big challenge for me has been just how do I remove these blockers, some of the negative talk, some of the imposter syndrome that's in my head, and really be intentional about how I show up and be clear around my vision, what I ask for. A quote that I love is that people don't get what they deserve. They get what they negotiate. And so sometimes I feel like I've been looked over and then I said, okay, I'm just going to wait it out here. I'm like, no, I should have made the decision to leave. And so it's easy to, you know, kind of point the finger and say what happens to you in certain scenarios. And like I said, by all means, I know how unjust sometimes things are, but I do believe that, hey, if things aren't ideal, we have the, you know, power to, you know, remove ourselves out of situations. That's something that I had to work on, is like basically what's happening in my head first and foremost.
Oh yeah. I think that we can be our own worst enemies in so many situations. And it's sometimes it's just like the confidence to take that leap, or the, you know, looking at something or being asked to do something you've never done before. And even if you know the logistics of it or how it should be done, it just feels overwhelming. And I think we all struggle with that throughout all, you know, our entire career. It doesn't matter where you are in your career, you can feel that and have to overcome yourself.
Exactly. And to that point, you know, when you're thinking about, like, imagine you have a coworker up here who's struggling and they're like, hey, I just took on, you know, a new project. I don't know what I'm doing. And I just have no idea where to start. Like, imagine you just, and because I've worked with you, I know, like, you would give them peace of mind and you would help comfort them and say like, hey, you could do this. You got this, like, you know, cheer them on, right? What you wouldn't do is give them negative talk, and what you wouldn't do is tear them down. And so think about what we do to ourselves, like what we tell ourselves. We tear ourselves down in a lot of ways. Oh, I can't do this. I don't know how I'm going to figure this out. This is going to be awful. Be as kind as you are to other people as you are to yourself. And I had to learn that the hard way. Give yourself grace and tell yourself you could do this. You could figure this out. You got this. Give yourself a pep talk. And I just try to be as kind as I am to myself, that, like, in terms of like how I am to other people, that's one of my personal goals.
Oh, I love that. I think that's so true. Like, we have to often give ourselves grace is something I think about, is give ourselves grace to learn, give ourselves grace to be encouraged. And it's difficult. It's really, really hard. And it's something we just have to learn to embody.
And you know what you realize? Like, everyone started somewhere. Like, no one, anything that you know, there was a time that you didn't know it and you had to learn it and you conquered it. And that goes for your boss, your boss's boss, your CEO. So everyone knows, like, here's a learning curve. Like, there's a time and place that you're going to have a project that you can't figure it out, but you have to know you have those soft skills to problem solve, to be a critical thinker, to be resourceful, to ask for help, to figure it out. And that's what's more important than anything, is that effort, like that drive to be able to do that versus, you know, always looking at the outcome or the result. That's what's important to me, especially to, like, in terms of leading people.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, kind of changing the subject a little bit, you are a mom and you are working from home. And, you know, so what does that work-life balance look like for you? And do you think it's different for you as a woman than it would be if you were a man?
So work-life balance, that is a touchy subject, right? Because I'm an entrepreneur. I don't have policies that have been instituted that I have to adhere to, right? I've had to institute my own policies. And I think it applies just as much to the entrepreneur as it does to the person working in corporate America, because there was one day that I just, like, was not feeling it. Like, I woke up and I was like, I just don't feel like working today. I needed a mental break. And I was like, I gave myself the permission to take the day off. I was moving around client meetings, you know, rearranging my calendar. And I was like, hey, my clients should be able to understand that, like, I'm not my full self today. I need a mental break. And so I had to learn how to take PTO days off as an entrepreneur. to take mental breaks. I have a block on my calendar to take a walk every day. And so you just have to be intentional about that. You have to build that into your calendar. So work-life balance to me is very intentional and very critical for me. And I do think it looks different for men and women. So just, I'm not saying this is 100% the case, but from my community and people that I know who are mothers, more of the parental duties fall on the mother than they do the fathers. And I'm sure there are some fathers where that's the case as well. But I do think that is different. And honestly, when I think about soft skills, like hire a mother. These are the most multitasking, problem solving people on the planet. Because like, think about even during the pandemic, we were here working for 2 years with these kids right next to us. Like on the, like trying to be their teacher and do our job, because I'm like sitting there making sure he's not slacking off, trying to, you know, play me or manipulate me while I'm working and getting me while, you know, I'm distracted. But we figure it out. Sometimes, hey, babysitter can't make it. All right, what's plan B? What's plan C? So I just think that we are just, I think it forces us to develop these skill sets that make us so much more high performers at work than our male counterparts.
I can see that. I can definitely see that. And I think about, you know, thinking about, you know, skills you get from being a mother. Negotiating with a toddler is not like negotiating with a prospect. It really isn't. Or a complicated client. I think I'd like to believe that the clients are actually easier than toddlers. 90% of situations.
I don't know. Like that. Oh, I'll have to think about that one. But I will say this one: I should not have to. My mom did not negotiate with me. Okay, so like, I don't know, these new parents. Like, this is not the move. I don't know why we feel like we need to negotiate with these little monsters, but we do. And I only say that out of love. But we do. And I'm sitting here like, case in point, my son texts me, mom, 12 times. I say, yes, case. Text me 5 more times, mom. I'm like, what? So he was supposed to get on the bus, but then I forgot to change his designation in school, like on the app. And then he was going back and forth. And I was like, hey, just like stay at school, go to ASP. I was like, I'll buy you a treat. Like, I literally went into negotiation mode. And why should I have to do that? Like, I'm the adult. I have to remind myself that. And I have to like be a little bit more strict on myself and enforcing that. But yes, you do learn great negotiation skills.
No, that's totally fair. And it's right. Like, it's a balancing game. Just like in business, negotiating with kids, you have to find where's the line. Where is it that this negotiation is no longer moving forward?
Yes. And I really sometimes I'm disappointed in myself. Like, I need to look myself in the mirror. Like, you are the adult. Take charge. Like, be a mom. Stand up. Like, I need to do that and give myself a pep talk sometimes, because, like, he wins way too often.
Well, as an agency, let's think a little bit about, you know, what is it that you look at when you're picking what companies you want to work with? I mean, I'm sure that it's, you have obviously your ICP, but like, what's important about the companies, like from their values or who they are, what kind of their structure is?
I love that question. So as an entrepreneur, I feel like I get to pick my coworkers. I get to pick my clients, you know, like working for a company, you can't always pick your coworkers, right? You just have to deal with what you got. And the same is true with the client base. So for me, there is a mindset kind of maturity that I like to deal with in terms of my ideal client. I met with this strategic consultant maybe a few months back, and he was saying like his ICP, he's like, I want founders of businesses who are just desperate. Like, they failed at least 2 or 3 times. And they just don't know what to do. And by the time they get to me, like, they're completely open. And I feel like a lot of times we get clients who feel like they know, understand marketing, but they don't. And so they don't really go into it like with a strategic mindset, or they don't know some of the foundational elements that go into like a sound marketing strategy. So I love clients who really give me autonomy and trust me to be able to understand their business, develop the right strategy so that we can implement that. Because sometimes people kind of look at me as like an order taker. Okay, well, like, do this, run ads. And I'm like, no. Like, we have to take some steps backwards to be able to fix some other core elements before we drive people to this landing page. It's not going to work, or it's not like relevant content, or we're not even driving the right people there. So there are a lot of foundational things that I like to go back to and explore, but they have to be in the right mindset to like understand that. So that's important to me.
Awesome. That totally makes sense. That, like, that mindset is really a little bit of that, like, that fit, that right fit.
It's definitely a fit thing for me. Yeah.
Well, that's kind of one of the fun things about being an entrepreneur, right? Is that you really can say no to people who aren't the right fit.
Oh, I have. So when you talk about the difference between like parenting and kids, I have so much more patience for kids. They don't know. But for adults who, you know, like you've done this thing so many times and it hasn't been working, and then you get an expert and then you challenge them on everything, and then you're like, and I'm like, hey, I don't think this is a good fit. And I had a client one time that, you know, wanted to kind of force me into like answers that I couldn't give answers to. So like, hey, I need you to give me quantifiable metrics. Like, what are some guarantees from your marketing program? I said, I can't give that to you. You've never put anything in market. We have no data. And I said, that's something I will not commit to, because in 6 months, when you don't see those metrics, because I'm totally guessing, because it's not data-driven, data-backed, then you're going to, you know, come back to me and say, I failed. And so, you know, he was adamant about this. And I went back to him and I said, you know what? I encourage you to go look at other marketing agencies. I said, look at that 2 or 3 marketing agencies. When they give you these metrics, please ask them for the data to support it. And so he was like, well, I don't even know why I should work with you. And I said, because I totally disagree with your whole marketing strategy. And so I said, if you want to work with me, fine. But if not, that's okay too. He signed with me. I didn't think he was going to sign with me. He maybe listens to this. I don't know. I love him now. Like, but he totally, like, you know, just, I think I really just drove in some key points and some awareness to say, like, we don't make guarantees. We can't. We cannot predict the market. If I could, I would like be on a yacht somewhere and I would have, you know, made so much more money. But I definitely want to make sure I'm always doing the right thing by my clients. I want to make sure I level set expectations. I don't want to overpromise and make them, you know, believe or buy into this thing that I don't have any data to support that, you know, I can achieve these outcomes. So that's what's important to me, is like benchmarking, iterating, continuous improvement versus making these, you know, overly ambitious goals and expectation and missing the mark.
Oh, absolutely. I think that's obviously, you know, you and I both work in marketing, and that's the smart way to go about building your marketing plan, is you want to have level set expectations, create benchmarks, and drive forward from there.
Yeah, that's the blueprint. That is the blueprint.
Do you feel that, you know, either as an entrepreneur or throughout your career, that you've ever experienced bias as a result of being a woman in tech? And how have you overcome that?
Absolutely. So I'm about to age myself, clearly, but I mean, I started corporate America 20 years ago or close to it. And things have evolved quite a bit from when I started versus now, but there's still a ways to go. And so not only has it been a challenge being a woman, but being a Black woman has a whole nother set of complexities too as well, that it's important to have those conversations and in public, saying them out loud, you know, and basically having uncomfortable conversations so that it will drive like meaningful conversation. And there have been biases in terms of what I know, assuming what I don't know. And I don't know that everyone always thinks about how uncomfortable it must be sometimes to be the only Black person in the room, to be the only Black woman in the room. I have to conform, like, really to everyone to fit in. So if, say, for instance, there's just a group of all white men and they're talking about college football, I had to adapt and like learn enough to be dangerous about college football. So literally I would call my brother and I would say, okay, like what happened with Georgia Tech this week? What are top college games happening? And then he would like give me tips. And so when I'm in these conversations now with these white males, like I could just say enough to be dangerous and they would be excited and they would feel like I fit in with them, right? I became a bourbon drinker because all my coworkers, like, or all my leaders and peers, like, we're big bourbon drinkers. And after a while, I actually really like bourbon now, but I had to adapt. And so very rarely do people have to adapt to me and say, let me understand what nuances are going on in her culture. Let me see what I can learn about her so I can fit it, feel like I fit into the conversation. That doesn't generally happen. So I think that, like, as, you know, conversations are being had more publicly, hopefully we start kind of breaking down these barriers and like having more meaningful conversations, seeking to really learn people. But it has been a challenge, like, you know, just in terms of just physical phenotype, you know, characteristics and having to adapt in the workplace.
Well, I think that the need to feel like you have to conform to just have a conversation, like that does happen in every workplace, right? Like, and that sometimes that doesn't, sometimes it can feel like bias. And sometimes it's just like the need to be like everyone else, which is such an interesting challenge that you don't really think about until you start to be like, right, that is a type of bias that nobody asked me what I'm into. Nobody, like, it comes very naturally on Zoom, I think, because like for me, and for example, you know, everybody can't see what's behind me, but I always have Broadway posters behind me. And so people know that's my interest. But we very, very rarely get that insight into people's lives. And you don't know that about people. And unless you take the time to ask, people feel the need to conform. And that is so hard.
And I would say this, I'm not even saying like, hey, let me walk away and have everyone feel like they have to conform. That's not the case. I feel like there is not just one path to success. For me, I wanted to accelerate my path to success. I needed people to feel more comfortable with me being in their space so that I could break down those barriers of being the only Black woman, the only Black person in the room. So for me, I had to feel like I had to make people feel more comfortable with me. Could you go in there and say, forget it, like, I'm just gonna stand on who I am? Sure. Understand the trade-offs there that might be off-putting to people. They may not be able to relate with you. So like even in sales, like they take the same strategies and they say, let me go look up and see like if we all went to, you know, and we're in the SEC together, like, you know, let me go see what college they went to. Let me see if they're from Arizona. And you try to find commonalities. That was me trying to find those commonalities in the workforce so that I could be more relatable to people. But there are assumptions, like for instance, I went to a restaurant and I was meeting some coworkers there. One of the ladies was saying, I had a hat, a baseball hat on. They didn't accept baseball hats. And she's like, take off your hat. And I was like, oh, well, like my hair isn't done. She's like, just shake it off. I'm like, as a Black woman, like my hair don't work like like other cultures in the sense. So for me, I was like, hey, I can't take this hat off. I just won't eat dinner. But like she kept pushing like the topic. And those are the things that we all should be made to feel safe in an environment and have to defend ourselves or in those type of scenarios. So I think it's a safety issue too, that also needs to be considered when having conversations with people, to not make them feel like they're an outsider, they're different because, you know, their hair may be different and doesn't, you know, work the same. And when I say work the same, but it doesn't, you know, you don't manage it the same. And like that matters. That matters a lot.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Like you never want to make somebody feel uncomfortable just being who they are in the space that you're in. And, you know, I kind of hate that, you know, restaurants have policies like that in general, because there are 1,000 reasons why someone might choose to wear a hat.
A thousand reasons. Over 1,000. I'm with you. And it could be someone's health challenges or whatever. Like it's so many different reasons. And that's why I love that, you know, corporate America has evolved to try to create more inclusive spaces for everyone we still have a way to go, but it's light years from when it, like, when I started.
Absolutely. I think we've made strides, but having these kinds of conversations and talking about those real experiences, I think, are what's going to really drive us to actually continue to change for the future.
Yeah. And like, I just feel like, hey, part of my legacy, I want to make sure that I leave this place in better condition than when I came. And that's important for, you know, my son. This is going to be his world, and it's going to be his kids' world after that. So I just think it's a responsibility. That's what it feels like to me.
Absolutely. And I know we're kind of coming up on our time here. So as a closing, what is the advice that you would give for a woman who, usually we talk about who's considering a career in SaaS, but since you're an entrepreneur, we can do either. So, you know, either who wants to be in the tech space or who wants to be an entrepreneur, what's that takeaway that you would give them?
I would say, in terms of takeaways, I have so many. Oh my God, I'm trying to think of one. If I had to like narrow it down to one. A key takeaway for me is the faster you realize, like, or you create a vision of what you want, the faster you realize, like, the faster you can identify if opportunities either align or don't align to that. And so you may not know exactly what you want in terms of the title and the company, like where you want to go in terms of 10 years from now. But what you do know is like characteristics of that. And, you know, you want a culture, a company culture that, you know, fits whatever. You want a leader that fits, like, you know, that supports you, or you want a leader more hands off. Try to like learn little things throughout, you know, each career experience about what you either want or don't want, so that each opportunity you can work on that alignment. Because for me, my whole theme word is alignment. And I'm very clear with my vision. And if it doesn't align, I know, hey, this is something I need to walk away from. And it's much easier for me to make those decisions because I have that vision, because I know what I want. So that would be my advice, is to continue down that path of always learning like what that looks like, so you can have something to measure up against.
Oh, I absolutely love that. I think that that is something that everyone should do early on in their careers, is determine, you know, what is it that, what's their life mission? What's their vision statement? Like you said, like those are things that, like, if you don't know that, it's really, really hard to even pick what job you want. Like, what career path do you want to go? We don't know that when we're 17. Sometimes you have to learn it.
But do you ever get in your car with no destination? Do you ever get behind the wheel and say, I don't have nowhere to go, I'm just riding? Like, but we do that for our careers, our relationships, our friendships, and we have no destination. We have no point, place, like, of where we put in our GPS. We just riding. So for me, that's important for me. Like, I have to, like, know, like, for this opportunity, I'm at least going to the gas station. Like, for this one, like, I'm trying to do a cross-country road trip. Like, I have a clear destination and knowing, like, what I want from that career experience. So I definitely think just making sure you're really clear on your vision. And people try to associate that quickly with titles, and that's not the case, because that could be misleading. So just understand that, and it will help you with your vetting process for your career experiences, so you can really know, like, what you're in pursuit of.
I love that. I think that that is a great takeaway. Well, thank you so much, Tanisha, for joining us. I really loved getting the chance to catch up with you. And I hope everybody enjoyed learning about your experiences becoming an entrepreneur and starting your agency. And they're able to take away as much from this conversation as I have been able to.
Well, thank you for inviting me. I love the title, the branding, you, everything about your podcast. Wishing you much success as you amplify our voices. And I think you are part of that change of giving us a platform to be able to do that and to create these, you know, environments for, you know, healthy, meaningful dialogue to move forward.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you for joining us for today's episode of Sassy. Subscribe on your favorite podcast platform or join us on LinkedIn at Sassy Podcast to stay in the know about future episodes and guests.